we got like Blog Talk Radio digital mixing some digital beats for us today. This is Mike Vandervoort. It's Thursday, September 10th, and I'm going to host the show today. Got a super popular, super positive guest who's going to come on and talk about failure, which should be awesome. Steve Brown, how are you doing today? Welcome to Drive Through HR.
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you, my friend?
I am fine. I am in Georgia and haven't traveled in a couple of weeks and getting ready to head to Illinois Sherm next week and then San Diego to speak at another event the following week and then the Q conference. So things are about to heat up, but I've had a nice little Labor Day break from travel and stuff. So all doing well. So Steve, for those folks, it's almost unimaginable, but for those folks who may not know who you are, tell us about Steve Brown and what you do and where you're from.
I am located in Cincinnati, Ohio, and my role is the Executive Director of Human Resources for La Rosa's Incorporated. We're a regional pizzeria, kind of an institution, honestly. We've been in business 61 years. And we're a fan favorite of people that live in the greater Cincinnati area.
There's a lot of fan favorites in Cincinnati, Graders and La Rosa's, Procter & Gamble, a few others, the Reds maybe, I don't know. So it's a great town. I lived there for a year and actually knew you from afar through the HR net way before we ever connected in person through social media. I had a chance to kind of follow along with you on your community that was HRNet for a long time. So I know I know you know that story, but I always just you're one of the first people that I saw doing anything like that. So ground
very cool.
Yeah, it's like what maybe 15 years old HRNet, something like that.
I guess I was doing social media before social media.
Invented social media much as Al Gore invented the internet. Awesome. and you're both politicians, so it has a certain logic and flow to it. So
sure.
So Steve, I know you know that we've been talking on the show about failure and pivoting from failure and how people grow from failure. And you said you had a lot of stories about failure. Everybody comes on and says that I could talk about failures all day. But before we get into that, we didn't get a chance to prep much before we came on. So are you okay with talking about Sherm, or is that something you just prefer?
Sure. Oh no, we absolutely can talk about that.
So I'd just like to. I'm very excited, and I know you were listening in the other day last time I did a show, and I gave a shout out to you. What I'd like to understand a little bit is, so you've been involved with Sherm for how long?
I've been a volunteer leader since 2001, so about the past 15 years.
Okay, and that was with Ohio Sherm, and then moved up and became involved with National Sherm, right? That kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah, I started locally in Cincinnati, worked my way through the chapter, and then was the state council director for Ohio, the state conference director chair for Ohio, and then moved into the MAC role, and now I'm being considered for the Sherm board.
Yeah, and I guess what I wanted to ask you, you know, is I mean, it's not like the Sherm board are a bunch of people that nobody's ever met, or they're dark, shadowy figures, or something. But they're in the circles and I'm pretty active with Sherm on a national level, and have been pretty active on a state level. And I have to say that the actual board members that I've spent time with or got to know, probably count on one hand, right? So the fact that you're sort of running this time or being considered to serve a term on the board is different, I think, and unique for a lot of people who feel like they're in the trenches in HR. And I think we all feel, because we've known you, you know, through social media and through conferences and speaking and all the different things that where we've had so many chances to interact over the years, I think a lot of us, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think I echo the feelings of a lot of us. So that for the first time, there's like one of us, you know, on the Sherm board. And I hadn't really felt like that before. So I'm very, you know, so I'm very excited for you. First of all, congratulations.
Thanks.
And
I know that.
It's not over, but I'm sure you'll do fine. I guess what I wanted to hear from you is kind of like, what's it like from your perspective? You know, what's it been like with that, you know, kind of, because it was news and it was sort of a rumor, and then, you know, then the ballots came out and the ballots got screwed up a little bit and people are complaining, I want to vote for Steve Brown and I didn't get my ballot. and then that's the first question I have. And then, like, the, you know, I don't know if you have a platform per se, but you know, just what are your hopes if you do get elected?
I think there's a couple of things, Mike. I know several of us have been very passionate and active with SHRM. I am one of many thousands that are active. And one of the things that I've heard from members is that they want to be considered and heard at the board level. And I think they have been through the MAC, more so than I ever knew before I was on the MAC.
Mm-hmm.
But the members want to, it's interesting, SHRM has learned how much the members care about being a member of SHRM. I don't think it was overlooked as much as kind of an assumed thing. I've heard great stories. I've heard concerns. I've heard suggestions from people already all over the country. So I think the exciting thing about the opportunity to run is I hope that it connects the association back with its members, because it's where it's always meant to be. I've met the other board members. I think they're wonderful. I didn't know them before and agree they're not dark, shadowy figures at all. They're senior HR people, many of them. And there's a mix. And I've heard some criticism about, well, why isn't it all HR people? I admire SHRM that they have a mix of business professionals that want to make the association do better. Good businesses have a mix on their board of directors. It's not all the people from the same industry. So I think the more I've learned, the more I support what I've seen. And the chance to bring the members' voice to the board, when I've talked with Brian Silva, the current chair, you know, that's what he's hoping I can do in my role. And I think the other thing is for people to get excited about who we are and what we do and have it be genuine. There's a lot of good things that we do at SHRM. There's always room to improve, but a lot of it is very positive.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I've been involved with SHRM National on an expertise panel for the last 3 or 4 years, and you know that's Mike Aiken's group. So I, you know, and you know, he's had a lot of turnover in his staff, but we've done. They're super supportive. They do a really good job of trying to keep the volunteers up to date on things. They're very receptive to our input, always looking for us to contribute more than we have time to do. And it's really been a good experience for me, because it did, like you said, with your experience on the MAC, it's really shown me that you know, SHRM isn't just this big monolith that just wants to take your $185 and, you know, hope you come and register for National. They do a lot of good work behind the scenes, and I've been pretty happy with them, the way they've gone over the last 5 years. I mean, I think before that there was a lot of criticism on my part and others, but I feel like they've really tried to move the dial. So how do you get selected for the board? Do you volunteer? Does somebody tap you on the shoulder? Is there a secret handshake?
Actually, it's an incredibly thorough process. The first year I was on the MAC, we asked about it because we heard some people speculating what the process was. I was asked to consider it, first of all. And after that, you go through a very extensive process, interviewing with a recruiting firm, mm-hmm. just as if you were trying to get an executive position in any company. It's a third party that is not internal to SHRM. And then after that, if you get through that process, you meet with a nominating committee from the board, which is a committee within the board of directors, like most board of directors have. And then you interview with them in person, and then the board gets to review the slate of candidates that were considered, and then they decide whether to move forward with that or not. The process has taken several months. We do keep it quiet because, you know, I may have run and not been considered. It's just like interviewing for any other position. It's amazing to me the depth they take because they want it to be represented well for the association and the organization. So I think there's a lot of careful consideration that goes into it. It's not the secret handshake and, you know, nudge-nudge type of thing at all. It's a very thorough and objective process, I think.
Thanks for sharing that. I don't want to make the whole show about that.
Good.
Although I'm sure, you know, it'll be, you know, maybe one of these days we can do a SHRM board show and get you and some of your peers come on and that would be an interesting kind of outreach.
Sure.
Anyway, so you're in the restaurant business, right?
Mm-hmm. And
the Browning Ferris case came out last week. The NLRB changed the joint employer status. I know La Rosa's has a magnificent culture, and you know you guys aren't scared. But do you see that having any impact on your business right away, or do you guys not know?
Yeah, I think the challenge is, you know, when you have a corporate structure and a franchise structure, and now that they're touching the staffing industry and the contract industry, I think it does present a challenge because I find employers trying to do their best for employees. But it makes the lines, it makes the gaps bigger between relationships. And I think it forces that, and it shouldn't be, because I know there are good relationships in franchise and corporate environments, and I also know there are ones that struggle. But we should be able to talk about best practices. Joint employer, I get it. You know, our franchise employees are their employees, and we don't touch that. But when we want to talk about, so what practices do you hear? Many companies, Mike, and you know this, from Q and all kinds of stuff, there are many companies who don't have an HR function, or they might not have a full HR department. And to add more regulations in any fashion is just harder for us to work with. I think, you know, we want to comply and do our best thing, but to have another layer on top of it, it just presents another challenge that takes away from just taking care of our people. I understand their decision, and it's something we'll have to work with. But I think it's going to affect all employers, especially on the contract side, because there's still a large move of people being considered through temporary services before they come on board. Not in our organization, but in white-collar organizations for sure. So it's just another huge challenge to face.
Yeah, it's definitely going to create some short and long-term uncertainty in the business, even though business will no doubt evolve to deal with it effectively like they usually do. I was also thinking, and then I'm going to get off my own little set of questions and get on to your talking, but thinking about, you know, when did you testify in D.C.? Was that last year or the year before last?
It was last year.
Yeah.
Last year in the spring.
Yeah, so, and I remember talking to you about it for a variety of reasons, and I was thinking about that today, because there was kind of a small backlash in your local community. And what I'm referring to is Steve testified in front of Congress, which was I had actually been asked to fill that same slot and couldn't because my employer preferred not to get up in front of that. And so Steve was the one that wound up doing it. And a lot of people watched, and he did a fantastic job presenting SHRM's position. And I think I remember your blog post. I think you said it was one of the most thrilling experiences of your life, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you went up there with intent, and I'm paraphrasing, you went up there with the intent of putting forth a position. And there, you know, the experience, as you recounted it to me, it was pretty okay. But you got one of the local newspapers wrote a story about it, right? You want to tell us a little bit about that?
I think they took some of the testimony and used part of it out of context.
And kind
overall,
of an in-
the
headline right?
Yeah, insinuating some things. I think the challenge is, you know, we should advocate as HR people. We are the voice of the employer and the employees, and no one has that role other than us. So for us to be able to stand up to our representatives and inform them and help them understand what's facing them and the legislation that's ahead of them, I think it's a critical role for HR people. But I know it means you're stepping out a little. I know it's a little risky. But we're doing the right thing. So it was tough. I mean, it makes me appreciate the democratic process a lot better. But it's nice to know that we can get our voice heard. And there are people on both sides of the aisle who want to hear from HR people. I don't think this is a political issue. I think it's a profession issue. And I think that we should step up and advocate for our employers and our employees.
And I think that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, like ego thing to be able to say, oh, I testified in front of Congress.
Right.
I think my employer's decision was as rash, you know, that they didn't want to be put into a headline situation.
Sure.
or anything like that. And then after watching you do what I thought was a magnificent job and then still get a little bit of a gotcha from the media, you know, it makes you kind of – that whole stepping out thing, to your point, comes with a little risk, right? That's not failure one way or the other, but it is taking a bit of a risk in your case with your brand.
Mm-hmm.
and yourself, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, I was just thinking about that because it was kind of like, you know, it just sort of felt almost like your paper, the local paper in the headline. It was just almost like they, you know, cast you as you went up there to just tear a hole in Congress, and it wasn't anything like that.
Not at all.
Media accuracy. So anyway, Steve, let's pivot over to the real show. Thanks for going down my wandering highway of Steve Brown questions. Let's talk about this theme of failure and learning. What's your take on that? And do you have a story you want to share with us on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm one of those odd people, Mike, that I've been in HR my entire career. I didn't fall into it. I wasn't assigned it. I chose it. But when I first started, I didn't realize how broad HR truly was. I came in as a recruiting specialist. And when I did that, I had no idea how vast things were. So my perspective, coming out of my first role as a recruiter into a generalist, I was lost. You know, I was like, well, I knew how to recruit, but I didn't know anything else. So there were a lot of stumbling blocks in my first generalist role, but I had a great mentor in the president. I worked for a small entrepreneur, and, you know, he taught me that the people were the most important facet of his organization, and he meant it. It wasn't something on his wall. It was something in his heart. I never would have known that coming out of school or going into my first HR role. I thought HR was all about process and procedure and filling roles and, you know, dotting lines and all that kind of stuff. And it's part of it, but it's not the majority of it. A lot of skin knees in that first generalist role. And some of it was from ignorance, because you just didn't know what you didn't know. I think the other part was being naive. It's interesting how I find a lot of HR people get frustrated and disappointed because people disappoint each other. But I don't know anybody on the planet who doesn't disappoint somebody. And for us to get jaded about that and cast employees into a them or a those people type of thing, dangerous. I know I'm as frustrating to people as they've been to me. It's a poor way to look at HR, and I find it to be a huge obstacle by a lot of people. Instead of enjoying the people they work with, they see them as challenges, and they're going to get what they think.
There are a few I can think of in my career that were more challenges. But, no, I agree with you. I can, there's a couple, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, the skin knees thing, you know, right? The first year I worked in HR, I went straight into a union shop where there'd been a guy for like 40 years before me, and so a big transition from this guy that'd been there forever to this, you know, essentially a kid. I was in my mid-20s, and I had a guy come in one time, Steve. He was a skilled tradesperson, electrician or something like that, you know, highly paid in a union shop, and he'd been drinking on the job, and I had to do an intervention with him, and you know, shop stewards were there, and I blew it. I talked to him, and I counseled him, but I didn't really know how to, you know, lay down the law, because it was the first time I'd ever had to do it, and I kind of let him off the hook, and it was really interesting, because after I did that, the union guys sat there, and you know, a couple of them, and after we were done with him, which involved sending him home in a cab, the employee, the union guys came back in and sat me down and schooled me on the right way to handle a drunk employee twice, because they said, you did that, you know, they said you effed that up, is what they said. and it was, can you imagine that, you know, that I mean, that wasn't it wasn't a failure. It was, to your point, it was skin knee with a lack of knowledge, right? But it didn't take me long to figure out what I had done wrong, because they just set me straight and laid down the law about it. You can't let guys get away with that. He's putting us in danger, the people we represent. So I had forgotten about that until you started talking about skin knees. So anyway. So Steve, what bumping your knees, so with that answer, like right now today, you know, you have such a great leadership philosophy, and you know, speak at Sherm National on a regular basis, and do a lot of things. What was one of the bigger moments of growth for you out of those skin knees?
I think the biggest moment of growth was I think I was taught by people above me, or even my parents, to take the emotion out of work. And you know, the old thing, you know, don't bring that into the workplace. And boy, I bought into that, because you know, you were supposed to have work as one part of your life and life as the other part of your life. And that's such a misnomer, and it's so wrong. We are emotion. Every person I know comes in with emotion. At our roundtable this month, somebody said the reason HR is looked at negatively at times is that it's so emotionally heavy. And I thought, wow, that captures it for me big time, because we deal with life and people's lives, and they are full of emotion and full of challenges and full of good things to work on. But when HR people want to do it by the book instead of the person, you're going to miss things. You're going to make a lot of stumbles. It's going to be very upsetting. I think you have to embrace the emotion. And the biggest thing I learned is I worked in a company where that was allowed. You know, we were extremely emotional people with manufacturing environment. And, you know, it was a little rough around the edges, and it was a little blue on the language. But we were real with each other. And when I learned that you could practice HR realistically, changed how I did it from then on.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think one of the things that it took me a while to learn is good or bad, right? Emotional, you know, whatever. People basically want to be treated fairly. And
yes.
And fair doesn't equate to the book. Fair equates to you're treating me like a human being, I think. You know, it doesn't mean to throw all the rules out, but you have to listen to their side. You can't just read the black and white. You have to embrace the gray is the other thing that I think is kind of similar to what you're saying. Let me do a quick reset. This is Drive Through HR. It's Thursday, and our guest today is the mighty Steve Brown from Cincinnati, Ohio, which on another show was one time named the best HR city in America. I don't know if they still hold that title in Cincinnati or not, but Steve is talking about Sherm and some of the learnings in his HR career. So, Steve, you've been in HR now how long? How many years?
Next year will be 30 years.
So you and I are almost. I'm 30. I'll be 30. I guess in next year. Yeah, you and I entered the profession at exactly the same time. I hadn't realized that. What advice? You know, you think back to that tall, geeky kid with the skinny knees. What advice would the Steve Brown of today give to that kid?
I think the thing I've developed probably more than anything, Mike, is to meet people where they are. Like the story you gave with the drunk team member, there's always something around what that means. The more I'm involved with people and get to meet with them one-on-one and listen to their side of things and hear where they come from, not to judge, but to listen, genuinely get in their shoes, I would have done so much better early on because I was just trying to make pieces fit instead of having pieces connect. I think having pieces connect works because every puzzle is different. But if it's making people fit everything, you can't do it. People have too many variables, which is wonderful. I enjoy that. You know, when we try to homogenize everything in the workplace through HR practices and procedures and policies, we're beating the humanity out of people. And, you know, I would tell my younger self, quit doing that.
Stop doing that. So I saw you speak at SHRM, and you have a great story about shirt colors and an experience. So that young guy wore the wrong color shirt. Was he a rebel even then, or?
Yeah. I was a contrarian and didn't know it. It's hard.
Why don't you tell the story? It's a great story. Why don't you share it with us?
I worked for a large Fortune 100 company coming out of college. And everybody was required to wear white shirts or blue shirts with our suits. It was the mid-80s, and that's what we wore to work. There was no casual anything. One day I wore a yellow shirt, which was unheard of. And it was a pale yellow shirt. It almost looked white. But my manager at the time called me into the office and asked me, you know, what the hell was I doing and how dare I? And I went, what's going on? I have no idea what I've done. I thought I'd done something horrible. I was a recruiter for internal clients, and I thought I'd overstepped the line or handled something poorly in the organization. And he was upset and said, how dare you wear a yellow shirt to work? This is out of control. And I went, what? And he wrote me up and put it in my file, saying that I was being insubordinate by the clothes choice I had made that morning. I never forgot that, and it was the telltale sign that if that's how they were going to run their culture, then I needed to be somewhere else. I think life is colorful, always have. So I needed to find an organization where I could be that person. They're a great company, they do great things, but it was my first real example of how powerful cultural norms are, and I had no idea. I was blind to it. Completely took me off guard.
and to be written up for something, I mean, when I hear the word insubordination, you know, to me that's a pretty serious, pretty serious offense. You know, you're basically, you know, declining to follow the instructions of your manager or whatever, right? And so that, you know, to have that as a young HR professional. It entered into file. I don't know. I don't know what I'd have done. I'd have probably turned into a pile of pudding at some point. But that sounds awful. But I guess that was the so you learned from that you had to find organizations that fit you as well as you needed to fit the norms of the culture, right?
Right. And you know, when you talk about, you know, what to tell younger people, Mike, I know that you would chime in with this as well as some of our other more seasoned people. I would love to talk to newer HR people, not because they're a different generation, but just to share with them some of the stumbling blocks that we hit so that they had a chance to work with them and have knowledge of them before they go into the field and not be discouraged by them. I don't think we teach world HR in our schools. I think a few people do, like Mr. Stolick up in Wisconsin. But other than that, you know, we're not helping our incoming future do well. You know, they should get some of their own skin knees, there's no doubt. But I, if I would have talked to them about cultural norms or working with parameters, I think it would have changed how I did HR coming out of the gate.
Yeah. I'd like to think that, but then there's a part of me that says, you know, if I hadn't experienced the, you know, getting schooled by the union, you know, and you with the shirt, you know, those are the little tests, right? Those aren't even big ones, but that, you know, that the wrong color shirt and getting written up is that actually, like I said, that story, when I first heard it, really stuck with me, because it's to write somebody up professionally in HR for insubordination, you know, almost seems like impossible, and especially knowing you, right? It just, you know, it's the culture of the company that you were in, and it was very important to them, I guess. Anyway, so do you have any other? I know you do, but is there any other, you know, kind of one or we're just checking time here. We've got about 10 minutes or so left, I guess. If you need to get done sooner, we can wrap it up whenever you need to go. We book 45 minute shows now, even though we try to hold them somewhere between 30 and 40 minutes. Do you have any other kind of singular moments that really stand out for you, where you know kind of like that one where you just did something wrong, aware or otherwise, and it kind of changed your view of, you know, your not only that moment of that company, but kind of was one of those seminal moments in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. In the manufacturing company I had worked in, I had no idea about all the compliance side of HR with OSHA, workers' comp, DOL, all the stuff, all the acronym stuff.
Right.
And we had a person who filed a claim or complaint with OSHA because he was concerned with a safety situation, and we had an investigation. Now, I was 24 years old, and it was to the point of I was so naive, I didn't even have an OSHA poster up, because no one knew that we were supposed to have one. So I had a real drill sergeant of an inspector. I mean, he took me over the coals, and then I had to sit down in front of the district representative for a hearing to say, here were the violations they found, and how are we rectifying those. And, wow, I'm talking about, you talk about a lesson to grow up quickly. That was it. But what I learned was understanding how compliance works and the benefits of that, instead of trying to hold people to rules, it's follow with the standards that are set, and you'll be fine. We walked in with an original fine set before us of several thousand dollars, and we were able to work it down to $150.
Nice.
But you know, I was a kid. I had no idea what to do. I didn't even know SHRM existed. And so a lot of this I had to figure out on my own. It taught me from then on to never be that exposed and not be aware of what HR is about, to be knowledgeable in my field. And at that time, I started making connections with other people, because I realized if I had to do this on my own, I was going to sink, because you couldn't stay on top of everything. I thought it was wonderful, but boy, to sit in front of somebody and just, you know, I still get goose skin thinking about it, because it was that unnerving.
Yeah, that's an interesting, there's a subtext in there about the fact that in many organizations, and especially smaller organizations where size and resources are limited, HR often becomes the sinkhole of everything like that, right? All the compliance stuff. And if you're, you know, like we have a Dave Ryan and Donna Rogers out of Illinois have done a thing, HR Department of One, and SHRM has got a sort of an initiative on that. It's super challenging to be in a small HR department and be expected to be the person who knows everything about everything regulatory. I mean, and I personally have never believed that an HR person should be a safety specialist, you know, because safety is such a critical thing. But in some companies, it's just absolutely essential, right? So it's unfortunate that HR often becomes the, you know, the place where those things wind up, and we get spread so thin, it's hard to do it any of the many hats well, I guess.
Yeah, correct. I think it speaks to the power of connections, though. For instance, you and I were in the same city and didn't know each other. What a
right.
shame.
Right.
And that's true across the country. The one thing that's been beautiful about social media is we all of a sudden became aware that people do HR everywhere. And we were surprised. Like, really? I didn't know that. I think that we should leverage that every day. I try like crazy to talk to peers, to other people, just to see what's going on. So now I don't have to be the person that knows everything. I have great resources. If I have labor questions, I call you. If I have compliance things, I call Haberman. If I have, you know, union, non-union, there's just stuff all over I can call. I can call Sherm. Too many HR people try to do this on their own, and I think it's the biggest fault of our profession. You want to be connected. You just need to take the step and do it.
And the inclination, and that thing you've heard in social media and otherwise is, you know, I have my job. I have my, you know, it's too much. I can't do all that. And actually, that's one in my former life before social media as an HR practitioner, that was me. Social media changed that for me on an incredibly massive scale. Let me figure out that those connections existed and that you could make them in ways that I never imagined before social media. So for me, that was a profound change. But I think many of us have learned that, and I think it's probably, to come back to the start of the show, probably why everybody feels so connected to you, because many people now know you. And that thing that you are, you know, that we feel like you're one of us, where we haven't had the chance to make those connections at the same level with those other people on the Sherm board. You know, that there's probably still steps that Sherm could take there, and they've done wonderfully to advance themselves in that direction since China first went out with her social media account when she was the COO. So. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. I know I always give these rambling interviews, but when I have somebody like you on, of all trades and a master of every one of them, I want to cover a lot of ground. So I guess any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
No, not really. I always have I love doing this. I love being able to talk about what we do. I think, you know, to have a show that explores the passion of HR is needed, and I love what Drive-Thru HR does, along with many other efforts out there. I would love to see more people be as excited or geeked about HR as I am. I'd love to have somebody be more excited about HR than I am. It would be phenomenal for all of us, and I appreciate everybody being so kind and supporting me. It's very humbling.
Well, I was geeked when we actually had to rearrange your schedule, and I realized that I was going to be the one to get to interview you because you were originally going to be on a couple days ago, and for a variety of reasons, shifting that around. So I'm grateful I got a chance to sit down and talk to you, knowing you a long time and consider you a friend. And I want to wish you, you know, all the best in your election, and I know it'll come out on the right side. There's a social media movement afoot with a hashtag Vote for Steve Brown. I heartily endorse that, and I hope that once you're on the board, maybe we can, you know, like I said, maybe we can do a show with some of the board members, some of your peers. That would be maybe a first. So,
yeah, I think it'd be great. I know they want to connect with everybody. They've heard the message from the members. I've shared that personally with them, along with the other members of the MAC. Please don't think it's me only, ever. And they're listening. They want to be connected to the membership, and I think we're going to see that happen.
Yep. So I'm gonna roll us out, hopefully, to some Rush. We'll see.
All right. Sweet.
Since you're a hard rocker, thanks for being on the show, Steve, and we'll catch up again soon, all right?
All right, Michael. Thanks for the chance.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.